This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our October 30th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we're here to help you become an above average investor. And we're here to be a kind of a shelter from the noise. There's a lot of noise out there from the CNBCs of the world and the publications. And we're just trying to give you the facts. Certainly, we'll give you our opinions. That's why you call with your questions. Some of what we're going to tell you is strictly our opinion, but we're also going to try to give you as much facts as possible as well. And there's plenty of noise out there to get caught up in. And if you're the average investor, you usually follow the daily news, and chances are you're unduly influenced by it. So Steve and I regularly urge you to look further down the road as opposed to, oh, what happened yesterday, what happened today. That news usually is priced in rather quickly. So what you have to figure out is what makes sense longer term. That news is already out. That's past. What is right for you in your personal situation? Now, market watchers today saw stocks drop. Now, the question is, for what reason? Now, it'd be easy to build a case for the argument that stock prices since the election have floated on promises of tax cuts and economic reform, all which have not come yet. There's certainly some hope still with tax reform. I think by the end of this year is extremely unlikely, but it could happen next year in a more slimmed down form than what is currently being proposed. Now, there was a report that the House of Representatives is considering phasing in a cut to corporate taxes rather than enacting them immediately. So that certainly hit the market, because markets want to see things happen now. They want to see savings as soon as possible. They don't want something phased in over the long term. So there's a good chance this is going to put a damper on the market, both today and probably in the near future. Now, of course, tax cuts are the centerpiece of President Trump's business-friendly agenda, and they're viewed as critical to sustaining the stock market's rally. So what can we expect tomorrow? And will we expect more downturn? Should you be worried about it? Well, probably not if you are invested properly for your risk tolerance levels and you're not caught up in the hype of the bull market, the Trump agenda. You are focused on the facts, focused on good solid companies, good solid investments that make sense for you and your goals and your overall portfolio. Now, what money matters are on your mind today? What are you thinking about? Let's open up our 24-hour listener line now and check for your questions. Now, here's one that came in between programs, or actually before today's Invest Talk program. Oh, we're going to go to Glenn. We're going to go live caller. Let's go to Glenn in Pleasanton. How you doing, Glenn?
Good. I had a question about PIMCO Dynamic Index. PDI. And I was looking at it. It has a high dividend, but it has a real high expense percentage too. I was wondering how all that worked and if you thought it was a decent long-term retirement account type investment.
Okay, well, this is the PIMCO Dynamic Income. And this is a closed-end fund, It's a little bit different than an ETF, right? It's new shares aren't created all the time. It uses a bit of leverage to get the yield, which going back, total distribution rate at the current share price is about 8.8%, which is a nice yield, right?
Yeah.
And the question is this something that is good long term? Well, one thing, anything that's using leverage is going to be kind of higher risk, right? And that worries me a little bit. What are they invested in? I'm seeing global portfolio of debt obligations. So it looks like they're invested in foreign bonds. Is that what you got from your research?
Yeah, I mean, everything looked reasonable, except how does that expense of like 4%, it has like a 4% expense, you know, for the fund. That seemed really high, so I was wondering how that fits in. Is it really only a 4% yield on this, or how's that work?
Let me take a look at the expense ratio. I'm not seeing it that. Total expense ratio. There's an advisor fee of 2%, an interest expense of about 2%. So, yeah. But that is an adjusted total expense ratio. It's still very high. Yeah, 2% is very high. You know, in good times, this is going to do fine. But that leverage is the issue. And I would like to see what is the average maturity on this portfolio. I'm not seeing that. And I'd also see what type of foreign securities they invested in. Are they in emerging market bonds? Are they in developed market bonds? Are they in European periphery bonds, where if the European problems kind of come up again, that could be a major issue? What is exactly invested in? So remember, in this market, anything that's yielding 8% or more, I would say even 7% or more, is probably going to be high risk, and especially with the leverage, this is certainly going to be high risk. So when things are going well, sure, it's going to do fine. But it's those times when, you know, the market's not doing so well, or that sector of the bond market, which, you know, foreign bonds, it's not going to do as well. It's going to certainly lag because of that leverage. So you're going to see a lot more volatility. So it's a higher risk bond strategy, and just be aware of that. Like I said, when things are good with foreign bonds, it's great. But what happens if the dollar strengthens, foreign currencies that they're invested in depreciate? That's going to be a headwind, or potentially push this these type of bonds downward because of that foreign currency risk. So I would be very careful. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not a bad fund. Overall, it's not bad, I'll tell you that. But make sure it's just a small portion of your portfolio. I would say no more than 5% of your portfolio.
Very good. Thank you for your analysis. Thanks. I appreciate that.
No problem, Glenn. Thanks for calling. Now let's take a look at the news carousel for InvestTalk Insiders on InvestTalk.com. These are the stories and features being reported by major financial news outlets that you can see anytime. Now, what consumers should know when purchasing health insurance, that's from NPR. Bloomberg also has a report from Washington about the GOP leaders and how they're offering little clarity on the House bill's 401k plan. There's a lot of opaqueness to how this is going to affect the 401k market, and I think it would be a terrible idea for the administration or Congress to enact anything that limits the amount people can contribute to a 401k for a couple reasons. One is this has been a great saving tool for employees. It's something that is grossly needed, right? More savings. Usually most people have not enough savings for retirement, so disincentivizing that would be a bad idea. And then think about how much money on a monthly basis goes into the stock market because of 401k plan investing. Okay, so that's going to be very interesting to see how that goes. And then CNN Money says you need to talk to your parents about their retirement, and they say it's time to have the talk, right? And a lot of young people are dealing with parents. I know I'm in that boat, frankly, where my parents don't have enough money for their retirement, and that potentially could be an issue for me. And so it's always good to have a good family discussion on that. So discussing finances with your parents can be uncomfortable, but it's very, very important. So you can read more about that and many other important financial stories on our source of information for InvestTalk Insiders. It's free to join. Look for the InvestTalk tab and then InvestTalk Insiders. Now I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. This is InvestTalk. How well do you know your Social Security rules? Do you know that for each year you wait after full retirement age until 70, you'll get an 8% boost in your benefit? Patience can pay off. may be the right strategy for you. 888-99-CHART is our number for any money questions right now.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Aaron calling from Chicago. I love your show. Thank you for all you guys do. I was reading the other day on CP Alpha about this investment strategy called the permanent portfolio. Looks like it was advocated by someone called Harry Brown. Did some research into it. Looks like he advocates portfolio, like the concept portfolio of 25% in stocks, U.S. and world, 25% in gold, 25% in long-term bonds, and then 25% in cash. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that strategy, and it sounds like you just kind of like rebalance every 6 months or year, and it looks like it has pretty consistent returns without the steep dramatic losses that you can often see in the stock market. I just wonder if you guys had any thoughts about that, and if it was too simplistic, or if you had any ideas or had known about that before. Be interested to hear what your thoughts were. All right, thanks. Keep up the good work. Appreciate your show and your insights. Have a good one. Bye.
I have heard about the permanent portfolio, and It certainly has its place if it's something that works for you. I mean, it's going to be like any strategy, that it's going to ebb and it's going to flow, right? There's going to be times where it's a great way to invest, and there's times that it isn't. And a lot of it, what you have to focus on is, what is that longer term volatility like for that type of portfolio, and is that in line with your risk tolerance level? Can you handle the times where it's going to lag the overall market, going to lag certain times, like right now where stocks are doing well? It's certainly not going to do nearly as well as stocks overall in the current environment. And some people get FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. You might have times where gold, right, from 2011 until the beginning of last year, gold was lagging dramatically. And even this year, it's been pretty volatile. So can you handle that type of volatility? And does it fit long-term for your return expectations? Is that going to fit you with your goals of whatever you're trying to achieve? So it has its place. It's not a bad way to start. I would say having good diversification like that between various types of asset classes is a good way to go. But I think there's ways that you can improve on it, like the cash portion, right? There's certainly going to be times where the market's really cheap and you really need to maybe up that equity portion, reduce your cash portion a little bit, and make that smarter choice of being more aggressive and finding opportunity there. So it's not a bad place to start. Like I said, good diversification, but make sure it's in line with your risk tolerance level and your ultimate goals. Now, what's on our list of topics for today? And as interest rates go up, many common types of investments will suffer, but others will also rally. So we're going to talk about four good investments when interest rates rise. That's our main talking point today. I also want to touch on the third quarter GDP report that came out. It hit 3% for the third quarter. And was that, how accurate was that, right? There's always kind of caveats, both positively and negatively towards any economic report. And what does this look like in context to last quarter? And does it make sense to be more optimistic about the economy? And then buying value, how to find value in this market. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And then lastly, the QE unwind, right? The Federal Reserve is planning to meet this week. They start tomorrow, announce on Wednesday. Likely not going to do much, but they're going to say a lot about what they're going to do in December, which is likely raise rates if the market stays up where it's at now. And we're going to talk about the unwind consequences for QE. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. I'm here to encourage you to invest in yourself. Invest more time in learning and preparing before you plop down any of your hard-earned money. Let's talk about it. Reach me now on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve or Justin. I'm Vinod calling from Kansas. I have a question about a stock, LOGI, Logitech. I think they have a good earning just a few days ago. Despite that, there was some sell-off. What would be the good point for entry? Thank you. I will listen to your podcast. Have a good day.
All right. He's looking at Logitech. L-O-G-I is the company, and they design, manufacture, and market products that allow people to connect through music, gaming, video, computing, and other digital platforms. So they're certainly in the technology space. 1.2% dividend yield. Revenues growing in revenues and earnings growing in the low teens. So solid earnings growth. Let's look at their more in-depth numbers, like their operating earnings yield, which is at 3.82%, not particularly high, to be frank, but you know, not horrible either. Their payout ratio is modest, 46%, so they certainly can afford that dividend. What I like is that they don't have much debt. Actually, they have about $500 million in cash on their balance sheet. Trading at enterprise value to EBITDA of 19, which is certainly not low, but it's not dramatically high. So I would say the value overall is just okay. Technically, it's rallied pretty strong from a low. Let's see, low of around the $6-$7 range in 2013. Now it's at $35 a share. So they've certainly turned themselves around. One thing I don't like is that their earnings is very fluctuates dramatically. From 2011, they made 87 cents, went down to 31 cents in 2013, then made $1.10 in 2015, then down to 98 cents last year, and going to make $6.66 next year. So a lot of volatility to their earnings picture, which I'm not a big fan of. What's their profitability? Return on invested capital, return on equity is about 26%, but that's also fairly volatile. So that worries me a little bit, even though it's high now. What's going to happen during kind of rougher business times? So expect a lot of volatility. It's a good company. Solid dividend. I think that dividend's fairly safe, especially since they don't have any debt. I see them being able to leverage up their balance sheet at least a little bit, even during rough times, to continue to pay that dividend and probably grow it over time. So from a value perspective, it's kind of just probably near valued, certainly not undervalued, certainly not significantly overvalued, probably at value. One thing I don't like technically is that it reversed in July and has been really not recapturing or even getting close to those highs back in, let's see, what was that, July, August of this year? Yeah, July, end of July. So you're right around the 200-day moving average. That's going to be support, but if it breaks that, to me that's starting a new longer-term downtrend, and then it could go all the way back down into the teens. So I would keep a tight stop on it if you're going to buy it, because technically I don't love it right now, especially the short-term movement and looking longer-term. It's had a large move, and a lot of times those reverse rather quickly. So I'm going to give it a thumbs down for now because just average fundamentals and poor technicals. Let's go to Wendy in Chino Hills. How you doing, Wendy? Wendy, you there?
Hello?
Wendy. There you go. There's Wendy. How you doing?
Hello. I'm doing good.
How can I help you?
I have a question regarding the stop limit. I want to know all the stock you have, do you put a stop to it? And what maybe moving average do you use to set the stop limit?
Well, that's going to depend on the stock. Every stock has its own level of volatility, right? A small cap growth company is going to be certainly more volatile than a Philip Morris, right? Which is a consumer staple, certainly a dividend stock, a low volatility type of name. So each one of those stocks that we own, and we buy all types. We buy big blue chip companies along with smaller growth companies. So what I use mainly is what moving average does this stock typically find support at? Some tend to find support at its 50-day. Some it's 100-day. Some it's 200-day.
Okay.
And what volatility am I comfortable with, and do I understand that, you know, a 3% move in this stock, in one stock, can mean a lot versus another, just noise, right? So it depends on the name that you're speaking about.
But you do put all the stock you have, you would have a stop limit at, for it, right?
Yeah, well, we don't have a physical stop in that we have, because we're investing millions of dollars.
Yeah.
We're investing for hundreds of clients and tens of thousands of shares usually. So if we were to put in a physical stop order, that would throw an order into the market that would dramatically drop the price. So what we do for clients is when we're making a trade is we're going to feed out, say we're going to buy or sell 30,000 shares of a particular stock. We'll feed those out over the day. We'll get an average price, and then we'll allocate it to each client so that we're not unduly influencing the value of the stock. So for us, we don't have an actual physical stop in, but we do have our stops.
But like for me, like a smaller investor, I should have one, right?
Yeah, you should probably have a stop in. Thanks for the call, Wendy. Coming up on tomorrow's Invest Talk, Nobel Prize winning formula, four ways to boost savings. That's tomorrow. What's your topic today? My direct line between 4 and 5 Pacific time, as always, is 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. First, we'd like to invite you to sign up for our next wealth webinar, How to Find Income and Value in an Overpriced Market. So if you're looking for income, there's a way to uncover the sources. And if you're looking for value for the long-term investor, Steve and Justin have bargain hunting techniques to share. So here's what you'll learn: how you can tell if a market is over or undervalued, how to find income opportunities, how to create an income portfolio. So join us. It's a live webinar Thursday, November 16th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. There is no cost. All you do is register, and we'll send you the link to join us live. And because it is live, you can ask your questions anytime during the hour. Sign up now if you'd like on investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab and then Webinars. Now let's get back to the podcast. This is Invest Talk, 1 hour of financial news and perspective, where you can talk directly with a registered investment advisor. So bring your questions. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART. Talk to Justin right now.
We have about 25 minutes left in the show, so if you're going to give us a call, you want to do it sooner rather than later. A lot of times people rush in at the end. We don't have time. So if you're going to have a call today, make it right now. Let's go to our main talking point today, and that's about three good investments when interest rates rise, and interest rates have slowly climbed from their recent historical lows just a couple years ago. And we've talked about this before, about how interest rates move in a 30-year cycle. 30 years up, 30 years down. Certainly we had a peak in the early 80s, and we've had a trough here 30 years later in the early 2010s. And, you know, it's not 30 years exact, but in general, that's how interest rates move. Now, are we going to move back up to 18% in treasury rates like we did back then? Unlikely, possible. It's hard to know where that's going to get to, but it's something to consider, that interest rates are likely on the rise. And the first type of asset that is good when interest rates rise is TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. And they're designed for rising interest rate environment, mainly because inflation almost always goes hand in hand with rising interest rates. Now, once TIPS mature, TIPS bonds, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities mature, you get back your principal plus an amount that equals to the inflation rate for that particular period. So the inflation adjusted return of your principal. So that is why TIPS tend to do well when the interest rates are rising, because inflation tends to be rising when interest rates are. Second are short-term bond funds. Now, because short-term bond funds are constantly buying new bonds, they get to replace the maturing bonds in their portfolio, because remember, they're only owning short-term bonds in their portfolio. They could take advantage of rising interest rates that tend to crush the value of long-term bond funds. That's why it's difficult to own long-term bond funds in a rising interest rate environment. Short-term bond funds, while they might yield a little less, they're going to be able to stair-step higher with the rise in interest rates. And then lastly is financial sector stocks. And now, financial companies tend to be lenders, right, rather than borrowers, so they profit from a rising interest rate environment because they get to charge higher rates for their loans. Their net interest margins tend to go up, and that is why financial sector stocks tend to rally when interest rates rise. But what you have to remember, though, is picking an investment solely because it performs well under a certain interest rate condition or a certain market condition isn't all you need to know. Just like any investment, you should be choosing that investment based on your overall investing strategy and existing portfolio and long-term financial goals. So if the investment passes those tests, then by all means, you know, it's factoring in a rising interest rate environment is certainly an important and viable way to filter out whatever you're going to invest in. But before you make that final decision, you need to make sure it fits into the full context of your financial picture. So that's our main talking point today. Hope that gives you a sense of what that means, what a rising interest rate environment means for various asset classes. Now let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question at 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number.
Hey, Steve or Justin, this is Ken from Wisconsin. Awesome show you guys have. I had a question or your input on Celgene, CELG. I was looking at it for a small portion of my portfolio. It's more of a speculative, hopefully a short-term quick hitter. They've been a pretty strong biotech company the last week or so. They've kind of gotten beat up between they canceled the Crohn's disease drug trial recently, and their stock got hammered. And then today, their quarterly earnings came out, and they got hammered like 16% down today. Just wondering what your guys' input on the matter was. Like I said, it's a small speculative portion of my portfolio just to buy it and see if I can get it to come back up quick 5%, 6%, 7%, 8% over the next week or two or three or so. Anyways, interested to hear your input on a future podcast. Thanks.
All right, he's looking at Celgene Corporation. This is a biotech stock, developed therapies to treat cancer, immune inflammatory diseases by regulating cells, genes, proteins, etc. It's about an $80 billion company, but that's down from well over $100 billion just a few weeks ago. I think its 52-week high is $147 a share. Now it traded today a close of $100.97, so down about 31% from its high in a rather quick period of time. That high was just, the beginning of October. So it's had quite the month to the downside, down 31% on the month. And it is near support. Its low in 2015 was at about $93 a share. Actually, that'd be early 2016. $93 a share. So that's kind of major support right in this mid to high 90 level. So if it breaks that, I would be very, very worried it's going to go down into the 70s. Is where I'd be really worried it goes. But it is into support. So could you get it for a bounce? Sure. A bounce is certainly possible and likely, considering how oversold it is, the massive amount of volume. I'd really have to dig into the specifics of the name and what the ramifications of the recent downturn is. But one thing I like is they don't have any debt. I love picking up companies who are down a bunch based on recent news, whatever it is, because especially ones that don't have any debt. Because having no debt allows flexibility, allows maneuverability. When companies are encumbered with a lot of debt, it means that, guess what? They just need to figure out a way to cover their debt payments, refinance their debt, reduce that debt amount. And that takes a lot of time, a lot of restructuring, and a lot of uncertainty that tends to keep the stock depressed a little bit. So I like the fact that they don't have any debt. From a valuation perspective, you know, it's, let's see, it's still a little expensive, to be honest with you. It's still expensive. You have an operating earnings yield of 5.5%, which is okay in this environment. But from a technical perspective, it is near support, no data like that. So if you're looking for a trade, make your stop at a close below $93 a share on a weekly basis, on a weekly close. Otherwise, I would say pick it up and see where it can rally, maybe fill some of those gaps that you see in the chart over the past month or so. 8899 chart, 8899-2-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about 15 minutes left, so give us a call. Now, the GDP report came in for the third quarter, and it came out about 3%, which was better than consensus of about 2.6%. And this is very good in an environment where a lot of economists were talking about the new normal, marked by slower growth relative to prior cycles, where prior cycles were more in the 3% range. And so we have two quarters of back-to-back 3% GDP growth. President Trump is talking about it, although he said that there hasn't been this type of growth since 2000, in the last 8 years. Well, that's wrong. It actually happened in 2011, I want to say. It was much better. But nonetheless, it's still good economic growth, and much faster than the beginning of the year. The beginning of the year was 1.2% for the first quarter. Now, part of that second quarter increase of 3.1% was a little bit of clawback from a weak first quarter, so be aware of that. Another for third quarter is that inventory accumulation due to storm outages kind of inflated the overall results. So meaning there was a lot of inventory build in the third quarter, and that probably is going to mean less production for the fourth quarter. So we're likely going to give some of this back. There's going to be likely some drag on from the inventory build in the fourth quarter on inventory draw that is likely going to reduce Q3 growth to some degree. Imports also trailed off. This is something that's likely due to the storms as well, the hurricanes in the Gulf that really sapped imports of oil and other products because ports were closed and things like that. And imports reduce GDP overall. So if there's less imports, that's going to be positive for GDP. And then consumer spending, which has been a core driver of GDP in the recent years, actually decelerated relative to prior quarters. So that's actually something that you will be probably a positive more for the fourth quarter. Now, year on year, we're looking at a 2.3% year-over-year GDP growth, which is up slightly from 2.2 year-over-year in the second quarter. But the economy only needs to grow 2.2% in the fourth quarter to reach the Fed target of 2.4. So overall, we're still in an economy that is, I would say, accelerating to some degree, but I don't think it's accelerating to the pace that President Trump is talking about. It's still, on average, kind of that mid 2% level, mid to high, and which you know is okay, especially for this time in the cycle, late in the economic expansion cycle, but we're likely to see some sizable drawdown in the fourth quarter. Probably certainly going to be less than 3% GDP growth in the fourth quarter, but overall we're still in a modest growth environment. Now, a reminder: Steve will be in San Jose on the 8th of November for individual retirement portfolio reviews. But I'm sorry to say that he is filled up. Now, I think we just made the last appointment today, but you can get on his wait list. We do have a wait list for him. So, or you can try to if enough people want to meet with him the next day, I think we can get him to stay one more day. So if you want to meet with him the next day, maybe we can talk about fitting you in maybe on the 9th of November. So if you like to schedule a meeting with Steve, you can just do it via phone as well. You can click on the Invest Talk tab on investtalk.com and then portfolio review. Now we can, like I said, we can meet via Skype or telephone or FaceTime And you can reserve a spot on his calendar whenever you're ready on investtalk.com.
Sign up is now open for our next InvestTalk Wealth webinar, How to Find Income and Value in an Overpriced Market. Here's what you'll learn: how to find income opportunities, how to create an income portfolio. So join us for this live webinar Thursday, November 16th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. No cost, all you do is register. And because it's live, you can ask your questions anytime during the hour. Sign up now on investtalk.com. Click on the InvestTalk tab and then webinars.
I was wondering, good exit point on Twitter. That's Twitter, TWTR, jumped recently in these past days, and wondering if it is time to get out. Thanks.
He's looking at Twitter. I'm not sure if he owns it, or he's looking for maybe a stop loss. I'm a little confused on what you're looking for exactly. Maybe a resistance point? There's certainly going to be a resistance point kind of in the low 30s, talking about $34.50. That's going to be a resistance point. It's only trading at $21.68, so I actually see some upside from here. There's other resistance points, talking about 25 and change. That's certainly going to be a resistance point, but I think the major one is in that mid 30 range. So that's where I would be kind of taking my profits. It's starting to rally after many months of depressed price, weak price action, and I think it's a name that really could do a lot if it gains some momentum, because it's a high flying tech name, or it's a tech name. I don't know if it's high flying anymore, but it's certainly underperforming. I think its potential. I think Twitter is a great platform for various reasons, and they just haven't been able to really come through financially. Their platform's good, but from an investment perspective, from a performance, company performance, and earnings and cash flow perspective, they've really done a poor job. So maybe they need new management. I think there's still a ton of potential for their platform, and I think eventually another company's going to buy them out. Their market cap, or what's their enterprise value? Enterprise value is only $13 billion, which is certainly still a hefty company, but they have so many users and so much interaction. I think they will do a lot if they're acquired by maybe an Apple or a Google or something, a company that knows how to operate their business a lot more efficiently, a lot more effectively, and I think that will eventually happen. When will they get bought out? Always hard to know, but I would hold it until it gets to at least that mid-30s level. Now, reminder, actually, what are we going to do? Where are we going to? We're going to a caller? We're going to a break. You're listening to InvestTalk. We have just a few moments remaining in the hour going into our last segment. We have 7-8 minutes left in the show, so there's still time for you. So reach me now with your question at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Angel calling from Toronto, Canada. I have a question about robo-advisory. Given the increasing optionality in online or mobile-first brokerages, like Robinhood for stocks or Betterment for an automatic distribution of your investment into ETFs, is this overinflating the stock market since it's so frictionless and easy to, you know, purchase a stock with a swipe like in Robinhood, or, you know, just transfer money from your checkings account and it's automatically allocated in the case of Betterment? If so, what are better long-term alternative securities that avoids the hype of jumping into ETFs or stocks? Thanks.
That's a great question and a great point. I think that's absolutely true. I talk about it all the time that we're over-indexed. Everybody has moved into index funds, and that becomes now a crowded trade. And it reminds me of the Nifty 50 in the late 60s when everyone was saying, just buy these 50 stocks and that's all you need. And that turned into a pretty bad crash of the overall market because of that in the early 70s. 73, 74 was a stock market, bear market, that was very similar to what we saw in 07, 08, etc. And I think people are getting into a crowded trade of just indexing. And you got to remember, indexing is closet to me active investing, because the index changes, and the S&P and the Dow, and they go in and they change the allocation of those of whatever makes up that index. So I think definitely it is overinflating the indexes overall. And the question is, what can you do to avoid it? Well, you can buy individual stocks, right, that have their own reason for their particular long-term secular prospects. You can buy particularly stocks that are outside of the indexes, right? They're not held within any of the major indexes. And that certainly is where you're seeing a lot more value, a lot better values in today's market. So there's ways to avoid it, but you certainly have to do more research than you do if you just index. And some people have the time, the expertise to do that, and others do not. Let's go to Chris in Santa Clara. How you doing, Chris? Chris, you there?
Oh, hi. I talked about someone else. My name is Harish, by the way. I have a question about Lindell Basel, LYB. This is a stock that purchased almost like 2-3 years ago. I have a good run up on this one, and it pays a nice dividend as well. So I was wondering, is this run here to stay, or is it a good time to take some profits on this and move on?
What's your goal? Are you a long-term holder, or what's your goal with this position?
I mean, if this, I have no particular goal per se. This is a a small portfolio. A small size of my portfolio that I actually trade stocks in, and on a shorter term. If this has a good run, I would like to hang on to it. If not, I would like to take this and then find a better deal elsewhere to go after.
Yeah, I actually still like it. It's still relatively cheap from an operating earnings yield perspective at 12%. That's very, very high. Revenue growth at about 15%, earnings growth about 16%. It's still doing fairly well. It doesn't have a ton of debt on its balance sheet, actually very, very minimal. Its market cap's $41 billion, enterprise value $45 billion, so it only has about $4 billion in debt on its balance sheet. Very, very strong return on invested capital, return on equity at 55% return on equity, 26% return on invested capital. One thing you have to worry, though, it is going to be a cyclical business. This is a chemical company, Netherlands-based, manufacturer of all types of chemicals, particularly that produce plastics. So in an economic downturn, there's certainly going to be downside to its earnings projections, and that's certainly going to hit the stock. So you want to keep somewhat of a stop on that, but I would keep it fairly wide simply because of the long-term profitability prospects of the company. Its dividend payout ratio is only 37%, so I think that dividend can certainly be hiked, even though it's at 3.6%. So frankly, I like it. I would hold it. I would hold on to it.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for the call, Chris. No problem. Time to wrap it up. Reminder, our sign-up is now open for our wealth webinar coming up on November 16th at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time, How to Find Income and Value in an Overpriced Market. Now, if you're looking for income, there is a way to uncover the sources. Now, if you're looking for value for long-term investor, we have bargain hunting techniques to share as well. You can sign up now on investtalk.com. And it is free. I'm financial advisor and licensed real estate consultant Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Glad to be with us today. On behalf of Steve Peasley and the whole KPP family, I want to thank you for being part of the program. Let's meet again here tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.